This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Division of the Arts and Humanities at the University of Chicago, offering an interdisciplinary Master of Arts program in humanities that provides individualized attention in a supporting community. The flexible curriculum allows students to focus coursework within a single department or engage with multiple disciplines, creating a uniquely tailored graduate degree. Applications now open for the April 30th deadline at humanities.uchicago.edu.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Make sure you stick around because later in the episode, we'll break down today's biggest stories in the Chicago area. But first, it's primary day. And while Illinois voters have been heading to the polls, they're carrying out their civic duty for all kinds of reasons.
I'm a union member and a Vietnam veteran from the U.S. Marine Corps, so I always vote.
All the issues are very important to me.
Pretty much everything on the ballot feels important right now.
I'm looking to put somebody in Congress who's going to stand up to the Trump administration, essentially.
Child care for our kids, teachers for our kids.
I feel like the best way to make a change is you vote locally, you vote nationally, but you really focus on local.
Climate change feels like really distant, especially in the current federal environment.
Getting rid of ICE. I have a long list. Women's rights and reproductive health. Yeah, there's a lot.
You can't make a difference if you don't vote.
Some walk into the polling place with a clear agenda and are driven by issues tied to their lived experience. Others, well, maybe they're just getting into the habit of voting, or they're hoping to figure things out right there at the ballot box. But whatever your motivation, in this episode, we're digging into what's driving people to participate in this election and why some people are just choosing not to vote. At the table was Stevie Vias, who's executive director of Chicago Votes, and Violet Miller, who's a Chicago Sun-Times reporter. Stevie kicked things off with more on why many people make the choice to vote. Here he is.
Well, I think the beautiful thing about democracy is everybody has their own reasons for why they want to participate. We do a lot of work, for example, inside the Cook County Jail, where we turn out voters. And a lot of the guys there are voting for judges. The fact that they get to vote for all these judges is a very important reason to turn out and vote. You have a lot of young people that we engage. We took thousands of kids to go vote at the super site last week, and they were just excited to be a voter. Their opportunity to cast their first ballot as an adult. And then you have all the issues, ICE, reproductive rights, LGBTQ rights, environmental justice, racial justice, especially with the recent transition of Reverend Jackson. I think this idea of fighting for the marginalized is fresh on a lot of Chicagoans' minds. And in whatever way we can fight for the marginalized, whether it be an issue at the ballot or a candidate at the ballot, I think a lot of people are turning out for those reasons to make their voices heard.
Yeah, certainly. And Violet, I mean, you've been hearing from a lot of folks in your past reporting, especially. You've gone out and talked to voters, and you're hearing some similar stories, right?
Yeah. And just in speaking with folks, I mean, some of the big stuff, I mean, you usually hear, you know, affordability, public safety. Those are the big ones that are always
right now,
going to be,
crime is up.
You know,
yeah.
The big things. But, you know, increasingly we're seeing, you know, more of these issues, like you said, you know, standing up for the marginalized, these kind of social justice issues breaking further and further into the electorate. I mean, we saw it in 2024 with, you know, the Democrats kind of reconciling or trying to reconcile with their stance on Gaza versus the electorate, specifically young people. And so, you know, I think that, you know, hopefully some of those candidates took something away from 2024 and, you know, kind of leaned into, you know, some of these issues that are again, clearly presenting themselves is more important to people.
Mm-hmm. Tell me more, Stevie, about the young people that you took to vote. You said they were happy to be there.
Yeah.
What else are they saying to you?
We also had a live DJ and raffle prizes and took pictures. It was fun. You know, we do it every single year. This year was one of our bigger years. We took over 1,000 kids to the super site over 2 days.
And these young people, they're paying attention to what's going on?
Yeah. You know, I think obviously the national political algorithm gets their attention. Mm-hmm. They know Trump, Trump, Trump. They know what's going on with Trump. And a lot of them, you know, these are marginalized youth that we engage with, and they don't like what they see happening in the federal government. And so for them, this is an opportunity for them to push back against all of the things that are happening on the national level. We do the best we can to make sure we provide that civic education. So more than just voting against Trump, they understand that there's a lot of congressional seats that are up. These are federal offices that you're going to send to represent you on the national level, whether it's U.S. Senate or congressional. Then all of these down ballot races and how they impact their day-to-day lives. So we turn it into a celebration. We turn it into a fun voting experience, and we use that as an opportunity also to engage the youth and understand what issues matter to them and draw a correlation between those issues, the candidates that are running, and the offices that they get to vote on.
Yeah. Illinois saw a dip in registration of young voters ages 20 to 22. Why was that?
So, yeah, in the last couple of years, the last few primaries, actually, we've seen, you know, a dip in young voter registration. This was down from a peak in 2018 of all voters in the area. But, you know, when I've reported on this in the past, people have talked about, like, young voters just don't feel heard or seen. They don't feel like campaigns are really promoting to them or reaching out to them. And the campaigns that I've spoken to, you know, have said the same thing. Mm. They are not reaching out to younger voters because younger voters are inconsistent voters. Mm-hmm. And when you have, you know, so much campaign funding, you're spending that on more consistent voters. You know, the older ages, 75 plus is a big voting block, 55 to 64.
Yeah.
I mean, even just the election results we got a few minutes ago from the Chicago Board of Elections, there are, you know, 7,700 ballots cast for the 18 to 24 age group. There are 35,000 for 75 plus. So that's five times difference, mm-hmm. you know, we're looking at here.
And I want to correct myself. That dip that we saw specifically that I was referring to was a few years ago, was in 2022. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, 4 years later, more of the same?
Yeah, we're still seeing, you know, the effect of that. And these are early voting numbers. These are largely, you know, mail-in ballots that have been counted already. And so that would be, you know, the larger chunk of younger voters. On election day, we don't see as many young voters turn out in person either. And so you know, primaries always get, you know, lower turnout, but specifically in this case, we're seeing even lower voter turnout despite having, you know, younger candidates, even for these larger offices like Kat Abigzale, mm-hmm. You know, even Mike Simmons, you know, at 43 is on the younger end of the spectrum
for these
offices. So, you know, it just feels like, you know, more of the same, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Have you been out yet today, Violet?
I have not. No, I've spared this year. But our intern, Eliana Green, is out at the polls.
Okay.
You can follow her on Blue Sky and Twitter.
I wonder what she's finding so far.
Yeah, you know, probably lots of cold folks more than anything.
Yes.
I think that's the one thing that across the board can be agreed upon today.
The weather was not in our favor for primary day.
Yeah, definitely not.
That's for sure. So as I teased above, right, and I want to hear from you both on this, the right to vote also includes the right to stay at home.
Yeah.
Stevie, you first. Is it wrong to not vote?
I don't want to say it's wrong to not vote. I encourage folks to do the opposite. Turn out, cast your ballot.
Why?
People are going to get elected no matter what. And I think it's important that your lived experience is represented as best as it can be represented in politics and government and systems. And one way to definitively do that is by casting a ballot. Young people, it's hard to get young people to believe that this system actually works. And there's a lot of apathy towards participating in politics. Even when we do see younger candidates, their voices, their faces, their stances are drowned out by all of the money that's flooding into Illinois right now. And so people are just seeing the same old politics on TV, attack ad after attack ad. And that actually doesn't inspire young people to participate. When you see young people participate, it is because there's a candidate there that inspires them. We saw with the runoff in the mayoral election, Mayor Johnson was talking about the issues young people wanted him to talk about, and young people turned out at a very high rate. If you look up at New York City in their mayoral election, Mamdani spoke to the issues that young people really cared about and stepped away from the Democratic Party talking points and ran a campaign that was different from what people traditionally see. And young people turned out and voted. And so, you know, in addition to like the civic groups like us, we do the public education, we tell people why it's important, but folks need to see their issues, their voices, their identities represented in their elected officials. And unfortunately, with all the money flooding into this primary season, even when there are candidates who are representing the youth interests, they're typically not the ones funded at a heavy level to be up on TV.
Yeah. Violet, anything to add?
Yeah, I would just say that I think that a lot of the apathy that you're talking about, I mean, it comes from people, you know, not seeing what, you know, their will reflected from candidates. Mm. You know, we see a lot of, you know, votes either come down to like a few folks in the margin, which, you know, emphasizes how important, you know, voting for especially down ballot races, a lot of the local stuff, because you just wouldn't believe how it impacts you.
But, right.
I think a lot of that apathy comes from the fact that like so many people are able to get directly involved now, you know, like it's just a very different environment than even, you know, 2016, 2018, where, you know, people were out in the streets confronting ICE. That is a very different, you know, situation than I think people have been in the last decade. And I think voting is going to start to reflect that just in the sense that, you know, if people were disillusioned before, you know, I have to imagine, you know, possibly even more so now as they just continue to endure these things election after election.
So how much of a role, Stevie, would you say identity factors into to how a person votes?
If they vote. It's a big role.
Yeah. Being able to see someone represent.
I think it's about 50%
of what you look like, what you stand for. Mm-hmm.
If I had to guess, which it's, you know, it's hard to really measure this.
Right.
But I'd say that 50% of what draws a person to a candidate is being able to see themselves reflected in that candidate. I remember when President Obama got elected the first time, I never thought of politics or civic engagement as a career path for myself. Mm. And then I saw him walk across that stage and I was like, oh, that dude looks just like me.
I was just going to say, you kind of look like him. Like literally.
You know, I was just, it opened my eyes to, it showed me that this is a space that I belonged in, a place that I get to participate in. You see two black women and a South Asian man leading and being elected to our U.S. Senate. There's been a lot said about that. But I think in Chicago, it's a beautiful thing that you see our electeds reflect our city, at least demographically. And it also is good for democracy to be able to not only vote based off demographic, but we get past that and we talk about the issues because we're so used to seeing people of color, black people, brown people.
So identity and gender also impact the way people vote.
I agree. Yeah, I think it does. It plays a big role, but I don't think it plays the biggest role. And I don't think it plays as big a role in Chicago as it may in some other cities across the country, which I think is great. It allows for us to talk more about the issues and not rely solely on identity.
Yeah.
That said, there are still a lot of identities missing from our political system and a lot of lived experiences missing, which I think is also really important beyond just gender and race.
What would you say is missing? What comes to mind?
From a lived experience perspective, I believe that, you know, there are a lot of people who are marginalized in our society who don't see themselves reflected in government. You know, the thing that pops to my mind immediately is the Democratic Party's tendency to still refer to people who have been or are incarcerated as felons, and kind of use that as a talking point even to attack President Trump. Mm. When in reality, the communities that Democrats claim to represent are over-incarcerated communities, and there are way too many people incarcerated in the state of Illinois, in the city of Chicago. And, you know, not reflecting that or not speaking to that demographic or not even coming from that lived experience or leading with that lived experience, mm-hmm. I think politics has kind of leaned on this. We shouldn't talk about that, or we shouldn't elevate those kind of people. But I know that for a lot of folks in Chicago who come from these marginalized backgrounds, it would be nice to see somebody who's...
It's relatable.
It's relatable.
Yeah.
You know?
Violet, where do you think people are getting their information from? I want to say they're going to WBEZ.org and SunTimes.com and checking out our voter guides.
But we put a lot of time into that, right?
Yeah, but is it news headlines that they're influenced by, or is it policy? Maybe a little bit of both.
You know what? I feel like social media has such an impact at this point that it's so difficult. And in news, even when you're reading it online, you know, you can be reading news, but like you get the headline on social media. A lot of people don't, you know, click past that. If there's a paywall, you know, whatever. We don't have that. But, you know, other sites, if you betray us, you know, there are paywalls and things like that that can stop you. And so I think a lot of people have been turning, you know, increasingly to social media. Because, you know, in one sense, you can get to know reporters better. But on the other hand, you know, obviously social media is rife with misinformation mm-hmm. and disinformation.
And I'm asking you these questions too, Violet, because you spent a lot of time on ICE coverage over the last several months, right? How much do you think immigration enforcement is going to play a factor here?
I mean, it's going to be huge, especially in this area. You know, I can't say, you know, for the whole country, we'll see, you know, obviously, but especially in Chicago, I mean, we're looking at 75% disapproval rating for ICE with Chicago voters. In Cook County, it's 62%, and you get into the outer counties, that drops down to 56%. But, you know, those are some pretty significant numbers, and 70% of Democratic primary voters in a recent poll said ICE was their number one issue. Just because, you know, we say Midway Blitz obviously hasn't been, you know, forefront of mind for a lot of folks who aren't still dealing with ICE every day, because they're still around, they're still doing what they're doing. You know, that's still forefront of mind for a lot of folks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to turn the attention to the two of you now. I mean, what type of voter are you? Like, how much research are you doing before you head to the polls? Putting you on the spot here, Violet.
Yeah, well, I mean, I will start with the fact that, like, when I was 8 years old, my mom brought me into the polling booth, and I helped her fill it out because I was reading, because I love this stuff. That I've always been into, you know, news and politics.
You're in the right business.
Yes. So, you know, I was on the path very early. So, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm lucky with my job. I do a lot of the research, and I get paid to do it. But, you know, for other folks, that's a lot more difficult. So I try to turn to, you know, obviously all of the local coverage. I try to avoid the national stuff when I can, just because, you know, they tend mm-hmm. to parachute in. They tend to not really understand the voter base mm-hmm. the same way as, you know, you're going to get with something like, you know, the Sun-Times, WBEZ, Southside Weekly. I mean, any of these local outlets, you know, they're going to do a better job covering their local electorate.
Community mm-hmm. reporting is everything, especially at a time like this. Stevie, what about you? What kind of voter are you? Are you,
you know,
super informed, you know, or do you go in there and you kind of figure it out?
I'm pretty informed. I feel pretty informed. You know, my grandmother grew up in like the Jim Crow South. And so voting has always been almost like a spiritual rite of passage in my family. For me, because of the nature of my work, I know a lot of the people running personally. And so a lot of it boils down to how I've seen some of these lawmakers vote on bills in the past that people don't pay much attention to. How I've seen some of these lawmakers carry themselves in public spaces, and really boiling down to, like, do I want that person representing me and my interests? And then,
so you're watching everything.
I keep an eye out, you know, because I'm down in Springfield a lot. I'm in City Hall a lot. I know a lot of these folks plan on running for higher office. A lot of them are running for higher office right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that informs a lot of my interest. And then I obviously we develop a voter guide too, and we do a lot of research. We provide the general public with the basic information they need. For me, like, these judicial races are really challenging. Yes. That's like the we have a really good judicial voter guide. We partner with Injustice Watch on it.
Yes.
So that's kind of like the thing that I always got my voter guide with me when I walk into the ballot box, because there's way too many names. Yeah, there's a lot of names. Yeah.
And to add on to that, I was going to say, I mean, when you're doing community work, like, you see which candidates actually show up and go to events and, you know, put the time in their communities rather than just saying that on the campaign trail. And I think that's a big thing for people too.
Well, we hope that folks are using that same level of information and taking it right to their local polling places today. We'll leave it there for now. Stevie Vias is Executive Director of Chicago Votes, and Violet Miller is with the Sun-Times. Thank you both so much.
Thank you for having us.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Division of the Arts and Humanities at the University of Chicago, offering an interdisciplinary Master of Arts program in humanities that provides individualized attention in a supporting community. The flexible curriculum allows students to focus coursework within a single department or engage with multiple disciplines, creating a uniquely tailored graduate degree. Applications now open for the April 30th deadline at humanities.uchicago.edu. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
Now for a look at the top stories of the day in Chicago and Illinois. From a trio of bronze bison statues passing through the city to continued debate over vaccine recommendations from the White House. At the table was Claire Lane, WBEZ's Morning Edition anchor, and Javon Paris, a WBEZ Weekend Morning editor. Some flights in and out of Chicago have been canceled lately, and you can bet the wonky weather had something to do with it. Here's Claire with the details.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a 1-2 punch, right? So we had the hundreds of flights that were canceled or delayed to a significant amount after very powerful storms we remember swept across the eastern half of the country. We even had a brief ground stop at O'Hare and Midway on Monday, if you recall that. Mm-hmm. But this morning, the flight tracking site FlightAware says now more than 750 flights scheduled to fly into or out of both O'Hare and Midway have been called off. Travels have been facing, as you know, these jams at security airport lines, too, because of the partial government shutdown.
Yes.
Those checkpoints have been brutal, especially at some of our bigger airports, including O'Hare. Atlanta's also been a big trouble spot.
Yeah, travel nightmare for sure. And I'm just, again, the whiplash continues because here we are with this very wintry mix. And I look ahead on the forecast and I see that I think Saturday we're supposed to have like 75 degrees. Can someone explain what's going on? Javon, is this just par for the course?
This is a wonky weather pattern. It is par for the course. It's not even going to get above freezing today, which is election day when people have to get out and go vote in polls. So take your hot chocolate with you if you have to go out and stay bundled up because it's going to be a cold day.
Yes, highs in the 50s Thursday, so you've got that to look forward to. And looking ahead to the weekend, your favorite Saturday, we're going to be almost at 70.
I can believe it.
It's a lot of back and forth.
I was going to say I can't believe it, but I can believe it.
You've been living it. You got to keep multiple coats out at all times.
This is part of the charm of Chicago.
That's why you love it.
Is that the word we're using, charm?
Yeah, charm.
Or is that a play on St. Patrick's Day? Lucky charm? Is that what
you're
doing?
Yes, okay, exactly. let's talk about primary day since you brought it up, Javon. Our newsroom is super busy right now. We've got reporters all over the place and editors just, you know, filing things away. But it's pretty cold out, as you mentioned. How do you think it will affect voter turnout, realistically?
Realistically, it may keep the voters in.
Mm.
And I encourage people to look up their polling places and find out maybe if there's a closer place or a warmer place with a shorter line. You can do that by going to Illinois Polling Plans Lookup.com. I'm sorry, Illinois Polling Lookup Online.com, and the mm-hmm. polls close at 7 o'clock. So keep that in mind as well. If you want to go in a warmer time when you're in the sun, that may help as well.
And for the folks, Claire, who do show up to vote in the primary, I mean, they've got big decisions to make today. We've been leading up to this, and today is the day. Remind us how high these stakes are.
Today is the day, and the biggest ticket is the top three contenders, which you had in your show, we should mention,
right,
who are all vying to replace longtime U.S. Senior Senator Dick Durbin. So the front runners for that race, as we know, U.S. Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy, also Rep. Robin Kelly, and Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton. Also voters in four Chicago area congressional districts choosing their next House representative. Retirements of heavyweights like Danny Davis and Jan Schakowsky stepping away. And we've also got Tony Preckwinkle as being challenged.
That's right.
By Alderman Brendan Riley. This is for the county board president. She's been an incumbent for a very long time. So we'll see how that shakes out.
Yeah, and again, Javon, you've got that website that voters need to know if they are heading out today. Illinois Polling Place Lookup. They can go online to find that. What time are polls closing?
Polls close at 7. However, if you are in line before 7, according to Illinois law, you will be allowed to vote. So as long as you're in line prior to 7 p.m., you will be allowed to vote.
As long as you bundle up and brave that chill.
Exactly.
Now, what coverage are we doing today, Claire, that people can check out? We've got a show tonight.
Well, first, if you haven't informed yourself, you should check out WBEZ.org. Our voter guide is there. Our crew has been working really hard. I actually tested it out this morning myself. WBEZ.org/voter guide. My address is on there and went through. You know, we've got some candidate profiles.
You
know sort of the backgrounds of different people. But yeah, we're going to be live tonight. You can hear us on 91.5 starting at 7, and you can see us at WBEZ.org. We're going to break it all down for you, primary election results style. Mary Dixon, Patrick Smith, and the lovely Lady Melba Lara will all be in the house to let you know what happened.
Yes, and you can watch them do their thing at WBEZ.org. Of course, you can tune in old school style and listen to us on 91.5 FM. We love to have you listen. And you can join us tomorrow during your morning drive because, you know, that's when we got all the information, right? And so at 8:45 tomorrow, I'll be on a little earlier than usual tomorrow, and I'll dive into who won, who lost, what races might still be too close to call. We're also going to hear from some of the candidates, some of the winning candidates, right here on In the Loop. So keep yourself tuned into WBEZ for all your Illinois primary results and much more.
You're starting early. Music to my ears.
I am starting early. I'm cutting into your shift, Claire. Did I ask your permission?
I welcome you anytime.
I kind of forgot to run this by you first, but yeah, that's what I'm doing.
We'll allow it.
You'll allow it? Yeah. Thanks, Javon. Now let's pay attention to some of the other stories that may be flying under the radar. First up, an update in the debate over scaling back the nation's vaccine recommendations. Javon, where are we with that?
So what has happened is a federal judge blocked federal health officials from cutting number of vaccines recommended for every child. This happened yesterday, the halt ordered by U.S. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to end broad recommendations for all children to be vaccinated against the flu, rotavirus, hepatitis A and B, and some form of meningitis. So it's...
Yeah, I remember when this came up, when the federal guidelines had shifted and Illinois said, not so fast. We're going to stick to what's, you know, we're not going to give folks this conflicting information. What else can you share, Claire?
Yeah, after this was a federal judge in Boston blocked this overhaul that we know was championed by Secretary of Health and Human Services Robert F. Kennedy Jr., mm-hmm. the administration says that it plans to appeal the decision. And in an email to NPR this morning, the department says it looks forward to this judge's decision being overturned, just like his other attempts to keep the Trump administration from, quote, governing.
Mm.
So more to come on that, no doubt.
Now, let's pivot here. A well-known name from DHS's Midway Blitz. Hmm. Remember that? Operation Midway Blitz.
Who could forget?
Here in Chicago last year. Well, the head guy.
Mm-hmm. Top dog.
Making a big career change.
There are a lot of adverbs in this story. There's allegedly possibly, potentially, but I'll get into it. of course, we're talking about the Border Patrol Commander Gregory Bovino, who was President Trump's aggressive deportation campaign person. A DHS spokesman said Bovino has not yet submitted any retirement paperwork, but that he has allegedly told Breitbart that he is retiring at the end of the month. So J.B. Pritzker announced it celebratorily yesterday on social media, saying no one is above the law and Bovino will be held accountable and responsible for the damage he's done to our nation.
So some local reaction already.
They're dropping like flies.
Yay. So first he was demoted, and then now he's saying, I'm out.
He's saying he's retiring.
Potentially.
Possibly. Allegedly.
Possibly.
Maybe.
Yeah. Claire, Attorney General Kwame Raoul is filing a lawsuit. This is aimed at protecting fair housing rights. Fill us in on what's going on with that.
This is correct. So the lawsuit is challenging guidance that was issued last year by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, essentially withdrawing guidelines that were aimed at providing a fair housing framework for housing providers. So the guidelines were aimed at preventing housing discrimination based on sexual orientation, gender identity, language, criminal records, and also source of income. Mm-hmm. So Kwame is a part of a group that's challenging that.
Anything else you're following? I'm sure that there are plenty more stories on your radar.
I'm always watching baseball. The World Baseball Classic Championship has been tons of fun for me at my house. My dog's been enjoying it. But Japan had Seiya Suzuki on the squad, Chicago Cub, and he was injured. He went out sliding into second base. This was against Venezuela, I believe, over the weekend. Mm. So he's going to get an MRI. Apparently that happened yesterday. And now Craig Counsell, the Cubs manager, sort of waiting to see what that MRI has in it regarding his knee and if he's going to be able to participate in the roster.
Oh, well, we'll keep an eye.
We are keeping an eye. Baseball opening day, Sasha, is next week
for
the Cubs.
Yeah, I've already got some tickets.
You do?
Yeah.
I might have to link with you.
Yeah, we'll chat about that.
We could say Slancha again.
Oh, now everybody wants to be my friend. All right, Javon, if folks are driving by Museum Campus, they might see some new visitors, won't they?
So this did my D.C. native heart good as a transplant who loved the Smithsonian as a child. The three bronze bison statues will spend their morning at the Field Museum. The larger-than-life bison are on a cross-country trip from Colorado to Washington, D.C. as part of the Smithsonian celebration of the country's 250th anniversary. They're going to be on display outside the Field Museum until 11 a.m. today before they continue their journey. Their visit and their display got cut short because of the bad weather yesterday. They couldn't be on display yesterday.
And why these bronze bison? What's the...
It's part of the 250th anniversary of America. And that's why they're traveling from Colorado, home of the Bluffs and the Bison,
to the D.C.
area as part of their representation.
Yeah, shout out to the Smithsonians in D.C.
It's amazing.
Love me a free museum.
Come on now.
Those were the days.
Yes.
Those were the days. So we won't have these visitors for very long, as you mentioned. They're leaving.
They're leaving at 11, We're less than 2 hours.
So if you're hearing this now, run.
Get to the Field Museum.
Run, but keep your earbuds in so you can keep listening to me while you're on your way to check out these bison. Now, the Chicago media, Javon, we lost two giants this week.
Yeah, WGN Radio's Orion Samuelson and WBBM's News Radio John Holtman both passed. Samuelson covered agriculture and was known for advocating for farmers. He joined WGN in the 1960s and actually was the one who announced the President Kennedy's assassination. And Samuel was 91, and Holtzman helped launch the all-news format at WBBM in the late 1960s and anchored there for decades, and he was 89. So happy trails to both of them.
Well, that's it for today's episode. Before you go, we want to hear from you. Did you vote in Illinois' primary election? Why or why not? And if so, what issue made you get up and go to the polls? Let us know at 888-915-9945. Now, we stopped by the polls earlier, and here's what a few of you shared.
Exercising my right to vote, because that's how we change things.
I think just in general, it's important to vote. It's important to use your rights as a citizen to help get the people in power that embody your beliefs.
Just trying to save our democracy and get ourselves back on track for what's good for everybody.
Again, if you voted or not, tell us why. That number again is 888-915-9945. And we might play your answer on the show tomorrow. Today's show was produced by Sienna Greaves. It was edited by Ethan Schwab. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll talk again soon.